This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines this hour: Tehran summons the UK's ambassador in protest of British officials' interventionist remarks and their support for terrorism in Iran. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas urges the UN and the international community to end Israel's crimes in the occupied West Bank and outlets. And as protests rage on across Peru's capital, the interim president says that her government will hold an early election if the situation warrants it. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is news. Thanks for joining us. Iran's foreign ministry has summoned the UK ambassador to Tehran over what it calls the continuation of interventionist remarks by British officials on the country's internal developments. In the statement, the ministry said it also launched protests against the UK's support for terror and rioting and its decision to impose sanctions on Iran over its response to the riots. The statement said that the efforts by London and UK-based media to incite riots will lead them to nowhere and will rather breed the Iranian people's hatred towards Britain. The statement said that Iran reserves the right to respond in kind to anti-Iran sanctions. The UK has repeatedly censured Iran over its actions against rioting and vandalism in the country, accusing Tehran of staging a crackdown on peaceful protesters. London has imposed several rounds of sanctions on Iranian individuals and entities, citing similar pretexts. Iran has warned the U.S. against its push to cancel the Islamic Republic's membership at the UN Commission on the Status of Women, denouncing the bid as politically motivated. Iran's envoy to the UN, Amir Saeed Iravani, said the U.S. move is contrary to the fundamental principles of the UN Charter. He said that if the U.S. push succeeds, it will create a dangerous precedent within the world body. Iravani noted that the U.S. bid is rooted in false claims and unsubstantiated allegations. The envoy stressed that the illegal initiative is yet another U.S. attempt to abuse the U.N. for the sake of its own political goals. He warned that any such move will be against the essence of the U.N. Foreign-backed riots erupted in Iran in September following the death of Mahsa Amini, who fainted at a police station in Tehran and died in the hospital days after. Illegal weapons entering Iran have surged during the past few months. Foreign sponsors of the recent riots have been planning to arm rioters to destabilize the country while stoking insecurity. But Iranian security forces have successfully foiled several of these arms smuggling operations, sending a strong message to the enemies of Iran that peace and stability are the country's red line.
Since the riots began in September, anti-Iran media has been depicting the situation as a violent crackdown on so-called peaceful protesters. For the past 2 months, they have been running a propaganda campaign to further pressure Iran under the pretext of violating human rights. But are these peaceful protesters? Iran's intelligence ministry has recently reported the confiscation of huge cache of weapons and equipment used by terrorists. In fact, Iranian security forces have thwarted several arms smuggling operations and dismantled a number of operational cells affiliated with the terrorist organizations such as MKO. This comes as the illegal influx of weapons into the country is on the rise recently. The confiscated weapons were supposed to be transferred to Iran to be used in the recent riots. Last month, in an interview with the Persian service of the British state-funded broadcaster BBC, former White House National Security Advisor John Bolton said the, quote, Iranian opposition is now being armed with weapons. Bolton added that these arms are being smuggled into the country from the Iraq's Kurdistan region, praising the use of force against Iran's security forces. The recent foreign-backed riots in Iran have claimed hundreds of lives belonging to both security forces and ordinary people. In addition, by conducting acts of vandalism, violence, and insecurity, rioters have paved the way for separatist and terrorist groups to infiltrate the country and carry out brutal attacks against innocent people. smuggling huge amounts of weapons into Iran to be used in the recent foreign-backed unrest is merely aimed at undermining the country's security. But Iranian officials have time and again stated that Iran's security is a red line that no one is allowed to cross. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called on the UN and the international community to put an end to the escalating Israeli crimes that are being committed in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. The movement issued the call in a statement on the International Human Rights Day. Hamas said that the world should help end the unjust siege imposed on the Gaza Strip and enable the Palestinian people to defend themselves with all means possible until the occupation is ending. The Israeli regime has recently intensified its deadly crackdown on Palestinians. Israeli forces have killed nearly 220 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip so far this year. Israeli forces have killed more Palestinians during raids in the occupied West Bank. Three Palestinians were killed in a raid in the Jenin refugee camp. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has reacted defiantly. It says Israeli crimes will only make Palestinians more resolute in their resistance. So far this year, the military attacks have claimed the lives of well over 200 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip.
Israeli forces have shot dead three Palestinians during a raid on the Jenin refugee camp in northern West Bank. According to eyewitness accounts, a large number of Israeli military forces stormed the camp on Thursday morning. The attack triggered violent confrontations with local residents, during which Palestinians were killed. The victims were identified by Palestinian media as Tariq al-Damj, Siddiqui Zakarne, and Atta Shibli. According to reports, before the confrontation broke out, Israeli snipers were positioned on the rooftops of buildings overlooking the camp. At least 10 people have also been injured there. Israeli forces also fired directly at an ambulance during the raid, and its medical staff reportedly survived death. Israeli forces have recently been conducting overnight raids and killings in the northern occupied West Bank, mainly in the cities of Jenin and Nablus. New groups of Palestinian resistance fighters have been formed there. The latest figures bring up the number of Palestinians killed by the Israeli forces since the beginning of the year to 216. At least 164 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank. Scores of Palestinians have also been killed in Israeli raids in the Gaza Strip.
Simply saying this, Israeli establishment, the military, the security apparatus, and the settlers have clear orders to kill. They kill Palestinians even in cases of suspicions. They are always quick to pull the trigger. Recently, almost all raids to the West Bank areas leave Palestinians either killed or injured, and none of the soldiers have been investigated to any of the crimes.
According to the United Nations, the number of Palestinians killed by Israel in the occupied West Bank this year is the highest in 16 years. Rights organizations say that Israel is conducting a shoot-to-kill policy against Palestinians.
Their main program is ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. And the second is to suppress any form of resistance of Palestinian people and to enhance settlements everywhere. So practically, Israel has all the interest in enhancing the oppression against Palestinians. And we've seen even certain escalation during election time because Israeli parties were using Palestinian blood to feed their election purposes.
The Qatari state-funded network says it has filed a complaint against Israel at the International Criminal Court over the killing of its veteran journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. The network says it has new evidence that the regime's forces directly fired at her. Abu Akleh was shot in the head on May 11 while covering an Israeli raid in the Jenin refugee camp.
The rising violence against Palestinians comes against the backdrop of Israel's defiance to be held accountable for its crimes. The Qatar state-funded broadcaster Al Jazeera has filed a lawsuit at the International Criminal Court, the ICC, over the killing of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. Al Jazeera says it has new evidence showing that she was killed by Israeli forces.
Many have called for an investigation. Shireen's family who are here today have made their own request. The Palestinian Authority has provided a comprehensive body of evidence, and yet there's been complete silence from the Office of the Prosecutor on this case, on cases across the board, in fact, in the Palestine situation.
The veteran journalist was shot in the head, killed on May 11 while she was covering their raid in the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. At the time of her killing, the 51-year-old journalist was wearing easily recognizable press attire. Al Jazeera now says its legal team has conducted a full and detailed investigation into the case and has unearthed new evidence based on several eyewitness accounts and video footage that clearly shows that Abu Akleh and her colleagues were directly fired in a deliberate killing by Israeli forces.
While there is overwhelming evidence from multiple eyewitnesses, over a dozen of investigations by reputable news outlets and human rights organizations and the United Nations, that Shirin was targeted and killed by an Israeli soldier, my family still doesn't know who the person is that shot that deadly bullet and who was involved in the chain of command that allowed them to kill my aunt.
It says the claim by Israeli authorities that the Palestinian journalist was killed by mistake in an exchange of fire is, quote, completely unfounded. Multiple investigations by independent organizations and media outlets have already concluded that Abu Akleh was deliberately shot by Israeli forces.
This was a proposal that was floated with only in recent hours, only today, by Al Jazeera. So I don't know that it has been a topic of discussion. I don't know that it would be a topic of discussion unless we had representations from the ICC that they were going to take an opinion one way or another.
Well, I mean, she was an American citizen.
Of course.
So it's not like you have no interest in it
at all.
But you oppose it.
We oppose it in this case for the reasons that we've
discussed.
The Israeli military, following a long denial, finally admitted in September that Abu Akleh might have accidentally been killed by Israeli fire directed towards suspects identified as armed Palestinian gunmen. The United States has said it's investigating the case, but has refused to publicly condemn Israel for the killing.
Peru's interim president, Dina Boluarte, has hinted about the possibility of an early election amid unrest over her appointment following the removal and arrest of her predecessor.
When I was sworn in 2 days ago, it said until 2026. However, if society and the situation warrants it, we will bring forward elections.
Boluarte also urged calm, saying former President Pedro Castillo's attempted coup had surprised the whole country, including ministers who backed him. She emphasized that the country is going through economic and food crises that need to be solved. Boluarte is currently trying to form a new government, even as demonstrators are flocking to the streets of cities, including the capital, Lima. Protesters have clashed with police for a second day, demanding the release of Castillo. Police used tear gas and batons to disperse demonstrators in Lima. Similar protests held in other parts of Peru, including the city of Arequipa. Demonstrators blocked roads, burnt barricades, and demanded early elections. The protesters say they do not recognize Boluarte, who took over as interim leader after lawmakers voted overwhelmingly to remove Castillo. He's accused of failed attempt to rule by decree and dissolve Congress to avoid a third impeachment vote. Boluarte served as the vice president under Castillo. Lebanese security forces say that there has been a significant increase in the number of Lebanese recruited by the Israeli spy agency Mossad. They cite the Arab country's deepening economic crisis as the main reason behind the rise. Mariam Saleh has more.
Lebanon has arrested 185 people suspected of working for the Israeli spy agency since October 2019, when the Arab country's ongoing economic crisis became apparent.
This is Israel's intelligence agency's invasion of the Lebanese virtual sovereignty. The Israelis took advantage of the economic crisis and the fact that the Lebanese are looking for job opportunities with U.S. dollars coming from abroad. And so they created fake companies through which they acquired thousands of resumes from Lebanese people. They were able to contact any one of those job hunters in the guise of foreign companies, while in reality they were Israeli recruiters.
Lebanese security sources have told AFP that the number has increased dramatically, from only 4 or 5 arrests per year.
One of the most notable examples of this was the busting of over 35 Lebanese and Palestinians that were gathering intelligence on Hezbollah and of the Palestinian factions in Lebanon for Israel. Israel, again, used a lot of fake companies and front groups to trap those kind of in a desperate economic situation into accepting accepting these fake front opportunities.
Out of the 185 people arrested since 2019, 165 have been prosecuted and 25 convicted and sentenced.
The economic collapse in Lebanon has taken its toll on the country in several ways, but it seems it's not the only reason for treason. Several collaborators admitted that they continued their communications with the Mossad out of sheer opposition to the resistance.
When we read the interrogation reports of those who were arrested, we understand that it was more than only giving intelligence. One of the suspects admits that he was asked to write articles aimed at sowing sedition amongst the Lebanese and inciting people against Hezbollah and resistance. They asked him, for example, to write articles which would give an impression that Hezbollah is linked to the Beirut port explosion in order to provoke hatred against the resistance movement.
Political analysts believe recruiting spies by the Israeli regime will continue since a military option is not on the table.
These kinds of more subtle forms of gaining influence in Lebanon, and especially putting people into a very desperate economic state and taking advantage of that, seems to both basically cut the losses on the military front that Israel and the U.S. Even know that it has unmatched against the resistance forces in the region.
Although Lebanon remains technically in a state of war with Israel, there has been no direct confrontation between the two sides since 2006. Nevertheless, Israel's espionage activities have never stopped. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
German police say a hostage-taking incident at a shopping mall in the eastern city of Dresden has come to an end. The police say that they have arrested a man during an operation in downtown Dresden without giving any details on the suspect. Local media earlier cited an officer as saying that a 40-year-old armed man was believed to have killed his mother and then stormed the local radio station before fleeing into the shopping mall. There he took several people hostage, causing evacuation and shutting off the mall. Officials have urged citizens to avoid the city center, which is usually overcrowded by shoppers ahead of Christmas and New Year. And that is it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Western media outlets are one of Africa's greatest enemies. Their coverage of Africa is consistently biased, cementing stereotypes that Africa has a leadership crisis and the continent is incapable of producing outstanding leaders. Western media outlets also meddle in Africa's internal affairs and even incite violence and civil wars. The most recent example is the conflict in Ethiopia, where Western media outlets supported the TPLF rebel movement that planned to topple a legitimately elected government. An Ethiopian protester speaks here about Western media meddling in the country.
These things happened the past 3 years, you know. We've been trying to solve out the things in back home, but still he's trying. Our Prime Minister, Dr. Abiy, he's trying himself. But the thing is, the other opponent party, the TPLF, they don't want the leadership that he's running. And then they get support from U.S., actually. They get truly support from U.S. because the overseas news, the parties which is passing through CNN, BBC, the fake news that they produce for us.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of news and events making headlines in Africa. In today's show, we are focusing on how mainstream Western media continue to portray Africa as the dark continent in need of civilizing. The core objective of this negative portrayal is to show that the continent requires Western enlightenment through modern-day enslavement and neocolonialism. So stay with us as our experts give us their insight on the ongoing Western media onslaught on Africa. You can also be part of the conversation by sending your comments through our social media handle.
Western media meddling in Africa. Mainstream Western media outlets are at the forefront of implementing the imperialist agenda of meddling and fomenting civil wars and political turmoil in Africa. Western media organizations present a trend of political instability in most of the countries in Africa, and even openly back rebel movements that are pro-Western and seek to topple governments that have adopted independent policies.
For instance, in Ethiopia, several demonstrations have taken place in the country slamming fake news spread by mainstream Western media outlets that openly backed the rebel movement in the country.
BBC!
BBC!
Stop!
Stop!
Lying!
Lying!
About!
About!
Ethiopia!
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 CNN!
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 Shame on you!
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 They can come here and they can check it everything. Then they can go back and say the facts, the real things. As international media, they don't have to release out the news that is not true. It is not totally true.
To discuss Western media meddling in Africa, we have contacted Abayomi Azikiwe, the editor of the Pan-African Newswire. He has traveled extensively in Africa conducting field research on political economy and history. Thanks, sir, for your time today. We are also joined by Lawrence Freeman, a political and economic analyst for Africa. Thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
So let's start off with Lawrence Freeman. Now, what is the objective of Western media outlets in portraying Africa negatively?
The first thing you have to realize is that the majority of the Western media outlets, including the very largest ones, are part of the political establishment. They're not independent journalists seeking truth. They have an agenda. They coordinate, or at least work together with those in political power, political, financial oligarchy, who have a world geopolitical doctrine towards other countries in the world. And much of the media, and I've seen this up close myself, are not reporting honestly and not searching honestly to find out what's really going on, the truth. They are part of the political or geopolitical establishment. Therefore, you have to realize the first thing is, don't think they're objective media. They're not.
The Western mass media is not neutral in the news it chooses to disseminate on Africa. The ideology of neocolonialism continues to dictate what the Western media reports on Africa. Let's now bring in Mr. Azikiwe. Do you believe these mainstream Western media outlets are serving the imperialist and neocolonial agenda?
Most definitely they are. A good example would be what happened in Ethiopia over the last 2 years. Where the United States was supporting a rebel organization. They were producing news that made the Ethiopian government look very disorganized and repressive. And also, they were attempting to tell people from the United States, including diplomatic personnel, that they needed to get out of Ethiopia because the rebels were on the verge of taking over. Now, none of this was true, and they just signed an agreement recently in South Africa and Kenya, a peace accord to disarm the TPLF rebels. So the U.S. media has been totally discredited in regard to the situation in Ethiopia. And there's so many other examples in Africa and around the world.
Ethiopian Broadcasting Authority vowed to take legal actions against foreign media distributing misinformation and unbalanced reporting, thereby meddling in the nation's unity. At the height of the Tigray conflict, Ethiopia issued warning letters to four international media houses, CNN, BBC, Reuters, and Associated Press.
And what we're reading in the Western media is not true. Reading the New York Times, reading the Washington Post, CNN, BBC, Bloomberg, all of them are pushing lies and falsehoods. And I've seen so many reporters report from Nairobi, from Kenya, and they're not here in Addis. If you look around in Addis, it is not true, and it's not the same of what these people are writing when they're not even here in this country.
Ethiopian people and government accuse mainstream Western media outlets of meddling in the country's internal affairs and backing TPLF rebels. It appears Western journalists in Africa are carrying out a hidden agenda of inciting civil strife.
This was very obvious in the case in Ethiopia. What you had is just a little bit over 2 years ago, on November 4th, in the early hours of November 4th of 2020, the TPLF, which was an ethno-nationalist organization, and their militia attacked a federal military post in Mekelle Tekere and killed many soldiers, hundreds of soldiers, stole ammunition, and the government, under the elected leadership of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, basically responded. But this was used to weaken the government, and my analysis at the time, which many people agree with, very early on, by 2021, a couple months after the war, I said, look, this is an attempt at regime change. They want to remove the Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed because he's independent. He's not controlled by them. And he was working on a plan for regional development and coordination.
The government of Mali has also definitely banned French broadcasters RFI and France 24 after these French media outlets disseminated fake news on the country's army. The banning of these media outlets came after the expulsion of the French ambassador to Mali, who insulted the country's government.
There are thousands and thousands and thousands of Malians today who say no to France. So what the European Union and France needs to do is respect the Malian authorities. They need to understand that the authorities in charge today are the only ones who can speak for our country.
More African countries are taking similar decisions of expelling Western journalists and diplomats who spread lies and work at the behest of spy agencies of their home countries. What's your take on this?
Yeah, some other countries have taken measures to restrict access by certain media outlets. Zimbabwe is a good example. They had, at one point, restricted the British Broadcasting Corporation because all the news that was being put out to the world about Zimbabwe was extremely negative. The same thing in Ethiopia. The corporate media has been decrying the fact that they cannot have access to certain areas of the country, that they cannot interview directly the prime minister and the president of Ethiopia. So, yes, they are quite angry because they cannot have unfettered access to areas as well as leaders within particular governments.
During a visit to France in 2020, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi slammed Western media for claiming that leaders of African and Arab countries are dictators.
You, the media, focus on this issue and you depict us as having no respect for people, as if we don't like our society, or as if we are violent leaders, despots. And this is unacceptable.
Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni has also lashed out at foreign media for their coverage of various events in the country.
President Museveni once branded the BBC and other Western media organizations as enemies because of their coverage of anti-government protests. What's your take on this statement by President Museveni?
Yeah, it does look very suspicious that the opposition, one of the leading opposition figures, has been supported by the Western media And when he was detained, he was then invited to come to the United States for medical treatment. So this really makes it appear as if the United States is supporting opposition groups in Uganda. Another example of Uganda was when the foreign minister of the Russian Federation, Sergei Lavrov, visited several African countries earlier this year. Museveni objected to the fact that the United States State Department was pressuring his government to denounce Russia in regard to their special military operation in Ukraine.
Well, thanks for that, Mr. Azikiwe. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we shall continue our discussion on how Western media outlets are meddling in Africa. Stay with us.
Western media meddling in Africa.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
You're watching Africa Today, and our topic this week is on how mainstream Western media outlets meddle and deliberately give misleading information on Africa. Our experts today are Lawrence Freeman and Abayomi Azikiwe. Now, apart from biased coverage and meddling, there is deliberate misleading information. For instance, during this year's August elections in Kenya, a host of Fox News, the leading conservative news outlet in the U.S., made racist comments about pregnant Kenyan women, where she claimed that pregnant women in Kenya are not allowed to leave their houses to vote. Let's take a listen.
Right. So she's talking about, like, what voting rights?
Yeah.
That we have less voting rights here. What about in Kenya, where pregnant women can't leave the house, so they absolutely have no constructive right to vote?
Now, this was absolutely incorrect, as all women in Kenya, regardless of race, religion, or social status, have equal voting rights, just like men. Now, Mr. Freeman, why would Western media outlets engage in such blatant lies?
As we've been discussing in this interview, you have to start from the standpoint that the West, not every single person, but the majority of the Western institutions are dominated by what I would call a geopolitical doctrine, which itself is completely a fraud and doesn't represent actual serious thinking. But the way the doctrine is portrayed, it's called a zero-sum game of politics. That if the United States is going to be on top, then someone else has to be on the bottom. And in Africa, they have no concern for the African people. They don't believe in development. They don't report on development, but the West does not believe in development. They don't believe in it at all. And this shows by the fact that they don't build anything in Africa. I mean, there is building going on by some extent by Russia, by India, Japan, South Korea. China, of course, is the major powerhouse. But the West doesn't build anything because they don't care. They're not interested. They're interested in control, not development.
Now, I'll put the same question to Mr. Azikiwe. Why are mainstream media outlets in the U.S., such as Fox News, deliberately issuing misleading reports on African countries?
Well, it's sensationalism. It also attempts to make it appear as if people in other parts of the world have values that are less than people in the West. And they can also create a situation where people can even feel grateful that they live in the West because of the level of democracy that exist in the Western countries. So I think it's a number of reasons why they put out fake stories about developments in Africa, which have no bearing with reality. I mean, there were several political parties that contested the elections in Kenya this year. It was a very close race. The opposition appealed to the Supreme Court. The results were upheld. So I don't see why they should be criticizing Kenya when, in fact, right here in the United States, you have an election that took place over 2 years ago that's still disputed among many elements within the electorate in the United States.
The news media played a major role in the 1994 Rwanda genocide. Some local media outlets fueled the killings, while the Western media either ignored or seriously misconstrued what was happening. Many believe Western media outlets were complicit in the Rwanda genocide that led to nearly a million dead people.
They would not cover it in detail. They would not do any real political analysis about why the killing was taking place. Also, during that period, Bill Clinton was president of the United States, and he refused repeatedly to categorize what was going on there as genocide. So all these variables played into the character of news coverage about events in Rwanda in 1994. The U.S. media failed miserably in covering the developments that were taking place in Rwanda during that year.
Zimbabwean Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services Minister Monica Mutsvangwa recently said it was time for Zimbabwean journalists to repel the propaganda from the West that seeks to divide and cause disunity among Zimbabweans. Are African media outlets doing enough to counter meddling by Western media outlets?
Yes, some of them are. Others are still sensitive to the criticism that is leveled against them by the United States and other Western countries. Others have trade relations with these countries, so they try to maintain a cordial discourse and relationship with these countries. But Zimbabwe is a good example where there's been many distortions about the actual situation inside the country.
Amid attempts by Western countries to counter China and Russia in Africa, a new report shows the United States is engaged in efforts to infiltrate and influence certain sectors of the South African media. According to the authors of the study, the so-called National Endowment for Democracy, a U.S.-funded agency, continues to infiltrate the South African media ecosystem.
What we found was that so-called independent media publications were not really as independent all the time as what they make themselves out to be. So we're not about being anti-American agenda or pro-Chinese or pro-Russian. We are pro-African. We are pro-defending our sovereignty from bad actors. And in this climate, the U.S. State Department, the NED, these are bad actors.
Now, our last question to Mr. Freeman. What should African countries do to tell their own stories and ensure that the world gets positive and unbiased news from the continent?
Well, African countries, they should be able to use soft power more effectively than they are. They don't always respond quickly and appropriately to false narratives. They let them go on for a long time. To some extent, they don't want to cause friction between themselves and some of the media. So they're afraid to say what I just said, is that the media is part of the problem, that the media is not objective. So they don't believe in fighting back as aggressively as they should, in an organized way, and in a rapid response manner. So stories circulate all around the world, negative stories about Africa, and they're not challenged. I would suggest that African countries form a unit of their government in the media, I would call it a rapid response team, and that they would respond to outright lies, negative comments, false information, false narratives in a more in a quicker way and more and forceful way than they do.
Iran, just like African countries, has been on the receiving end of meddling and biased reporting by Western media. Recently, Iran's security agencies designated Iran International, the London-based Saudi-funded Persian-language TV network, as a terrorist organization responsible for instigating deadly riots in Iran. Iran's intelligence minister, Ismail Khatib, says this pseudo-media outlet has sought to foment insecurity and division in the country. Rioters and terrorists who wreaked havoc across Iran over the past months received their cue from Western media outlets.
You have the last one, Mr. Azikiwe. Now, Iran and many African countries are facing a similar challenge of being targets of meddling and incitement by mainstream Western media outlets. Now, how can they collaborate to counter these Western media onslaught?
Yes, the news agencies in Africa and in Iran and other countries should definitely collaborate because a lot of the news that is being put out over the Western networks are being filtered by the news agencies themselves, the commentators, those who do the analysis. It's not clear exactly what their political motivations are. Some of them clearly are not in favor of the Iranian government or other governments throughout the world. The BBC, for example, has a Persian service, yet they don't interview anyone from the Iranian embassy or the United Nations, from the many Iranian universities in regard to what's going on in Iran. It's the same situation that we have in regard to Ethiopia, Zimbabwe, and other countries in Africa. So it's a lot of bias that's going on that's passing for news.
Well, there you have it. Developing countries are all facing an onslaught by the mainstream Western media outlets, and therefore they need to collaborate to counter these negative coverage. I would like to thank our guests today, Mr. Bayomi Azikiwe and Lawrence Freeman, for their incisive analysis. And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. It's always great having you. Goodbye for now.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
هيهات ما ذلك الظن بك ولا المعروف من فضلك ولا مشبغ لما عملت به الموحدين من برك وإحسانك.
Dear listeners, we have reached this part of the Divine Commands application to be discussed. وَلَا مُشْبِهٌ لِمَا عَامَلْتَ بِهِ الْمُوَحِّدِينَ مِنْ بِرِّكَ وَإِحْسَانِكَ. Nor is it similar to the goodness and kindness you have shown to those who profess your oneness. The embodiment of Muwahideen, as we concluded in the previous episodes, are the Ahlul Bayt alayhimu salam. And now what we are meaning to say is that they are the pillars of the heavens and the earth. If the heavens are firm in their positions, if the earth is stable within its movements, if the world beings and those living on the earth are safe, it is all thanks to the Ahlul Bayt, their spiritual light and their favor, as they themselves have referred to it. Obviously, only those having a pure heart and righteous deeds believe this concept. Only the true Muwahideen, to whom Almighty Allah shows His goodness and kindness based on this part of the Kumail's application, will be able to believe. In this relation, Imam Baghir alayhi salam says, إِنَّ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ بَابُ اللَّهِ الَّذِي لَا يُؤْتَى إِلَّا مِنْهِ. Surely, Allah's Messenger is Allah's gate through which only one can enter, and the path of Allah through which only one can reach Allah. وَسَبِيلُهُ الَّذِي مَنْ سَلَكَهُ وَصَلَ إِلَى اللَّهِ عَزَّ وَجَلِ وَكَذَلِكَ كَانَ أَمِيرُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ مِنْ بَعْدِهِ. Amir al-Mu'mineen is too, as such, the same after him. وَجَرَى لِلْأَئِمَّةِ وَاحِدًا بَعْدَ وَاحِدٍ. The same is true for the Imams, one after the other. جَعَلَهُمُ اللَّهُ عَزَّ وَجَلْ أَرْكَانَ الْأَرْضِ أَنْ تَمِيدَ بِأَهْلِهِ. Allah has made them pillars for the earth, so that it will not shake its habitants. In this regard, also Imam Zainul Abidin introduces themselves, saying, we are the ones for whose sake Allah holds the earth firm. نَحْنُ الَّذِينَ بِنَا يُمْسِكُ اللَّهُ السَّمَاءَ أَنْ تَقَعَ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ إِلَّا بِإِذْنِهِ وَبِنَا يُمْسِكُ الْأَرْضَ أَنْ تَمِيدَ بِأَهْلِهَا بِنَا يُنْزِلُ الْغَيْثِ بِنَا يَنْشُرُ الرَّحْمَةِ وَيُخْرِجُ بَرَكَاتِ الْأَرْضِ وَلَوْلَا مَا فِي الْأَرْضِ مِنَّا لَسَاخَتْ بِأَهْلِهَا. The earth would swallow its inhabitants if it were not for us living on the earth.
And how can the gods of hell threaten him when he calls out to you, my Lord? And how would you abandon him therein when he has faith in your grace to set him free? Unless that is not the concept of you, nor has your grace such a reputation, nor does it resemble that which you have awarded by your kindness and generosity. To those who believe in your unity, I definitely conclude that had you not ordained punishment for those who disbelieved in you, and had you not decreed your enemies to remain in hell, you would have made hell cool and peaceful, and there would never have been an abode or place for anyone in it.
Thank you, Allah, that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So it is by following the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, dear listeners, that we will reach this station of being a true muwahhid. We have to learn our monotheism from them. This is and has been the first and foremost invitation part of every prophet coming to the earth. It is by following the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt that we'll be safe from the punishments of the Almighty Allah. This is exactly what the Divine Qumayl supplication explicitly mentions. Hayhat ma dhalika dhannu bik. That kind of punishment is not the kind of punishment that is expected of you. Wala al-ma'ruf min fadlik. That is not well known of your bounty. This is not how you treat with the ones who profess to your oneness. And in this regard, the Holy Prophet ﷺ has said, "An-nujumu amanun li ahli as-sama." The heavenly beings feel safe and secure with the stars. فَإِذَا ذَهَبَتِ النُّجُومُ ذَهَبَ أَهْلُ السَّمَاءِ. Whenever the stars disappear, the heavenly beings leave too. وَأَهْلُ بَيْتِي أَمَانٌ لِأَهْلِ الْأَرْضِ. He goes on and says, "My Ahlul Bayt too make the earthly beings feel safe." فَإِذَا ذَهَبَ أَهْلُ بَيْتِي ذَهَبَ أَهْلُ الْأَرْضِ. Whenever my Ahlul Bayt leave, the earthly beings will leave too. This is what Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam introduces. He says, "Nahnu baytun nubuwa wa ma'dinul hikmah." We Ahlul Bayt are the household of prophethood. We are the source of wisdom. Wa amanun li ahli al-ard. We are the safety for the earthly beings. Wa najatun liman talab. We are the salvation for those seeking salvation. So, this is what we will achieve by following, by adhering to the Ahlul Bayt. Firmness of the heavens and stability of the earth are due to the spirituality and favor of the Ahlul Bayt, the origin and the source of Almighty Allah's mercy. Their heavenly assets, their spiritual power, belong solely to them. No one in heaven or on earth is equal to them in ranks, yet with this entire asset to their credit, they are humble. This is what we have to learn from them. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.